and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. My name is Lebukule, your host. My guests and I will be having conversations on matters of self-development, emotional well-being, spiritual growth, and overall transformation. These are guests whose work, expertise, knowledge, and wisdom has inspired and moved me tremendously, and I hope that they inspire and move you too. Here is another episode of the Stretch Podcast. Before the episode, just a note to say, if you're hearing this, it means you are not on the subscriber base of the Stretch Podcast, which means you will only be getting half an episode. We do not run adverts on this podcast. We do not claim to. Our income is directly from our subscriber base. We would love for you to join the subscriber base if you love and value what we do here. The subscription is 99 rands. You will get the link to subscribe on the show notes at the bottom or on all of my social media links on the bio. Until then, enjoy this episode and I will see you hopefully soon on the other side. Hey, dumelang, my friends. It is I, Lebukule, your host, with another episode of the Stretch Podcast. And today I am in conversation with a friend, a brother, a fellow entrepreneur, and someone that I absolutely adore and respect very much, Toivo ya Toivo, also known as Bolokang. Yeah, so Bolokang's name is now Toivo, and I am so sad for some of you who are listening to a partial episode, because we talk about why he's called Toivo ya Toivo and why the name seemed to have stuck, so much so that it's actually going to be in his ID, which is something I highly recommend. He does embody the spirit of Toivo ya Toivo. If you know your politics, if you know your African politics, Southern African politics, you know who Toivo ya Toivo is. I am not going to tell you who he is. I can't teach you everything, guys. And it's December. You Google who Toivo is. But at the end, and I really don't know why I asked the question at the end, because I had meant to ask it at the beginning so she can tell you, so he can so he can tell you why is it that he was named that. It's a fascinating story, really. Now we are in conversation about entrepreneurship and Black people, and I struggled to title this episode. I was going to title it The Evolution of Entrepreneurship in Black People, but in as much as in the conversation, we really just track the evolution of how entrepreneurship has been through different eras, you know, the era of the Mabonyas, the era of your stoned cherry, Lokshin culture, and the era where we are now of apps and new rising entrepreneurs, your Theo Baloyi, Batu, Skinny Sboo with his socks. Although we didn't really touch on Batu and Skinny Sboo, but we sort of touched around that era. So when you track the conversation, you can hear that it's the evolution. But, you know, titling it that, yeah, you know, I battled a little bit and I just settled on entrepreneurship and Black people. And I just hope that you will enjoy it and you will find it as deeply fulfilling and educational as I found it. And why are we talking entrepreneurship in the middle of December, of November? Because November is actually known as Entrepreneur Month. There is a week that is dedicated to Global Entrepreneur Week. I just haven't seen much about it, not even on the socials. I don't know, maybe I'm too much in the bundus, but I haven't seen a lot of activity around it. I haven't even received invitations. The only person who I spoke to about Global Entrepreneur Week is my other fellow brother, fellow entrepreneur, Rosh Mamabolo, and I had a conversation with him, which will only air in the new year, because it is, oh my word, it is the type of conversation You want to hear at the beginning of the year when you're busy doing your resolutions, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, whether you have an entrepreneurial friend, partner, child, you really just want to listen to me and Toivo now. And you also want to listen to me and Roche in the new year. So that's what we cover in the conversation. We really literally begin with why is it that entrepreneurship is not a first choice? You know, people always just go to entrepreneurship as a last resort, where you either go into entrepreneurship because you can't find a job, or you are really sick and tired of your job. You're sick, sick, sick to the core, sometimes even physical. Then you decide, ah, maybe let me try something on my own. Or you're being retrenched, then you try something on your own, or you're fired. But it is hardly something that is a choice, especially with my generation. You know, it's never with the young guys, with the younger generation. You know, the millennials, you find that it is a first choice, or largely because there are no jobs really. But also they are that way inclined. You know, they're very freelancy, they're very slashy. I'm doing this slash that slash that. They're very social media, they're very app driven. So it's a very interesting era that we find ourselves in. It's honestly an important conversation, especially if you have young children, to understand that at some point as Black people, we need to internalize this path and own it and really run with it. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about land as well. I mean, Toivo spends a good 10 to 15 minutes just talking about how land directly links to entrepreneurship. I mean, you're gonna love him. You're gonna find him deeply, deeply inspiring and highly generous, and really educational. I don't know why Toivo does not have teacher in his profile, because he's very teachy. He embodies the teacher archetype. I was schooled. I was nodding. I was laughing. I was listening very intensely, as if, you know, he's not my friend. And I am going to read his bio, which is always my favorite type of bio, nice and short and straight to the point. At the end also of the conversation, we cover what it is that he's doing right now. He's a serial entrepreneur, an entrepreneur with really big ideas. Before I read his bio, Toivo is also an accountant, a chartered accountant by profession, and has tried the accounting route. Didn't really work for him despite the salary. There is a part where he makes me laugh so, so hard. I mean, I laugh so hard that I mute myself when I laugh that hard. I muted myself because it was just going to be too much. When he refers to a salary as, you know, because he hated his job so much that the incentive of a salary, he linkens it with having great sex with someone he hates. So, okay, let me read his bio. An experienced chief executive officer with demonstrated history of working in the accounting industry, skilled in enterprise risk management, business planning, internal audit, corporate governance, and financial accounting. Strong business development professional with a Bachelor of Commerce, BCom focused in accounting from University of Cape Town. Hey, Toivo is so humble. He is a chartered accountant in South Africa and he is recognized. You can Google and find out. You know, they know him, unlike some people with titles and we can't find them. Okay, so I mean, I really don't have much to promote. You know that the retreat is coming up. You know Stretch is open. Please do subscribe to the Stretch podcast. It does a world of good for us. But I will leave the whole why I need you to subscribe for the last episode of the year when I do reflections and a year in review. For now, I give you my conversation with Toivo, yeah, Toivo, on entrepreneurship and Black people. Toivo, yeah, Toivo is on the Stretch podcast, finally, getting. Were you denying me or did I never invite you?
No, I never got the invite.
Basically,
So,
I'm so embarrassed because I think you were supposed to be part of the first group of invitations when I started interviewing people. So you are here now, and I suppose it's divine timing. How are you? Welcome.
excellent. Yeah, I thought I'm not yet invited. It's my time to grow up a bit. I'll get invited when I'm fully grown and adult. So here I am.
That is so sarcastic, but it's fine, Kitlauthola. Kitlauthola. So we are having this conversation at the tail end of a euphoric feeling of the Bokke win. And I remember sending you a WhatsApp saying, Hore, it is such an ironic thing that rugby, with its history in South Africa, with the history of the Springboks, with all that we know about them, happens to be the only thing, I don't know of any other, the only thing that seems to create some form of unity, whether that unity is manufactured or whether it's temporary. Obviously, it's temporary. It's just so bizarre. So I want to know what you think about that before we talk about entrepreneurship.
It's both interesting and challenging. Is it a question of we are uniting on rugby or we are uniting on a sense of victory that we can attach ourselves to? Yeah. For me, it's yes, it is rugby, it is South Africa that's won, and we are the one thing we all have in common is that we are citizens of the same country. So
And
the record will say the South African rugby national team won the World Cup. And I think that's the part we celebrate. And can we be allowed permission to just celebrate and be happy? There's a lot we struggle with.
Let's claim this win. That's what you're saying. Let's just relax around it, and the politics of the country and the politics of rugby, we can always talk about them some other time. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. But with besides being with you on it, I actually did feel the vibe. I felt it. Nesimaga, we were not acting. I think we were really genuinely united for that moment, for that week. Let's talk about another interesting topic, which is entrepreneurship and Black people. I'm struggling with titling it, so ke tla bona gore ke title jwang, because there was another title I thought of, which is the evolution of entrepreneurship with Black people. That's a mouthful, but I love the idea of evolution because we are sort of evolving. So perhaps the first question is this: why is entrepreneurship such a challenge for Black people? Why is it such a challenging thing? Why is it not a choice? Just to extend the question, why is it that whenever someone goes into entrepreneurship, A, they're not getting a job, or B, they're very, very tired of bus John in corporate, or three, there's a retrenchment and there's some funds, and then they're thinking of it. Why is it not the first choice?
I don't know if it is not the first choice per se, or if it's a case of there's a process, there's a hurdle that you must jump, which is the hurdle of fear to get into it. My thinking is the wish and the desire to be independent, rich, etc., is naturally within us. The enterprising is naturally within us. There's and we can get into the semantics of what do I mean by saying the enterprising, which entrepreneurship comes from the word enterprise. We have sort of accepted the narrow understanding of enterprise as being something you do to make money, when in fact enterprise is really what you do as you forage, as you acquire, as you do all of these things. That's enterprise. The only thing is that with capitalism is enterprise translates into you getting wealth or creating wealth. But we human beings, in fact, I would even say nearly all animals that are at the apex, they reach that apex position because they enterprise. They go and hunt. They think about surviving and using whatever resources that are out there that are available to actually acquire those things and survive out of them. Your antelopes and your goats and whatever, they eat grass and they eat plants, so they don't have to do much. All they need to do is to wake up and eat and then drink water
And sleep. They don't
and
chase
sleep.
anything.
Yeah. Every other creature must actually go and find them and trick them and trap them and hunt them and kill them. And there's a whole process that happens there. So, and then you must also fight for territory. If you're a lion or a leopard or even a human being, you need to own land that's fertile, that's arable, etc. All of that is actually enterprising.
Very, very interesting. And it makes me think of hunter-gatherers. When we were hunter-gatherers, we were enterprising, even the gathering, because we always just focus on the hunting, which was a largely masculine, and which was embodied by the males. But the gathering was also not just like antelopes. The women largely and the
Yes.
young boys would be getting deep into the woods and the forest and foraging and figuring out, is this a poisonous mushroom or not? Is this edible or not? So it wasn't like you pick up grass randomly like that. So we've always been enterprising. And you mentioned something interesting, Hori. The difference with capitalism is that we enterprise for wealth. Why is that?
Yes.
Why is that a difference? So why is that important to know?
It's an important distinction because the way that capitalism has created an entrepreneur, it's created an image of somebody A that is competitive, sometimes combative, and then you have all of this these lists. The top 10 richest so and so, and then Forbes has this list where they list who's the richest, who has the most money. And then the competitive spirit in human beings is, I also want to be in that list one day.
I also want to
Top
be
30 of
on
this.
top.
Exactly.
And then it goes further down, like top 30, at 30, top 40 before 40. Like it never ends. It's a machine.
Yeah,
That's
precisely.
running. Okay.
So we get shifted from enterprising for our own survival and our own little well-being to now enterprising so that we are the top dog. Because also, admittedly, there's a power dividend that comes with being top this or top that.
So capitalism came and disturbed a natural flow of things. How,
Yes.
why is it then that knowing what we know and Black people having such an intense spirit of resilience, who have toppled almost all the colonizers? I mean, if you look at the entire continent, politically speaking, why Ripalaki? Yeah, enterprising to create our own wealth and to create our own brands and to create our own empires. Where is the struggle exactly?
Let me answer in this way. There's a contrast. There's a South African and Southern African picture that emerged after the end of apartheid colonialism. versus what you find go West Africa, for example. And it actually has a bearing on how entrepreneurship emerges, right? Largely, West Africa was colonized, but the land was not actually taken, especially the Anglophone part. So essentially, after the colonizers were defeated and people started to enjoy freedom, they enjoyed freedom already with land ownership in their hands. So for them to actually start getting into entrepreneurship, etc., they already had an asset base from which you can start. Contrast that to Southern Africa, where even as we speak, black people in South Africa, being 90% plus of the population, own less than 13% of the land. Right? In Zimbabwe, land ownership happened because Mugabe decided enough is enough. I'm pulling the plug on on this land situation. So, land, as much as people don't seem to understand the whole politics here, land is the basic unit of wealth. Without it, look, you can create a brand of something. You can create a fashion brand. You can own a chain of shops, etc., and you can make money. But the day that you actually do not have food because there's a severe drought, then you will understand that land is important because land gives you food. It gives you a place to sleep. It gives you a place to worship. It gives you everything that you need to survive as a person. And then enter capitalism that says actually land also gives you access to money. And that money can be translated into a wealth-creating asset. So that is I think for me, the slow development, the entrepreneurship comes from there. And it started because we have a situation where the country and the powers that be are not intentional about addressing the land question, and therefore addressing the wealth gap question.
But Toivo, let's sit on this land thing for a little longer, because it seems I like that you said a lot of us don't understand the politics of land. At least I know them, and they are a bit too emotional to tackle. So it's one of those that I prefer to put my head in the sand. But let's go there a little bit. Let's suppose I am a young person and I'm 28, and I don't think that land is important. And I argue that, yeah, but what am I going to do with land? Because I'm not a farmer. I don't want to raise stock. I'm not even interested in growing my own food. But I want to create an app, and that app is going to make me money. What is it that I'm fundamentally missing? At a core, and also you can go spiritual if you want as well. So I'm just asking you to give a short lecture on the importance of understanding why you need land.
Okay, great. First and foremost, you can create anything and make a lot of money out of it. But mostly you need money to create certain things. So you want to create an app, which incidentally has been my recent experience. You want to create an app, somebody says, fantastic idea, I can create that app if you have half a million rand. Someone that has a piece of land can actually and here's a piece of land. I am pledging it. Can you borrow me half a million? If I don't pay you, then you can take the land away, sell it, and get your money back. That is the one person who's likely to have their app paid for and released quicker. The other person that doesn't have land will then have to phone around, ask friends, family, and whoever that cares to borrow them money to contribute so they can build an app. 3, 4, 5 years down the line, that idea is no longer going to be a viable idea. That's That's a very simple connection between what a piece of land sitting there can do for you now in the capitalist system versus what it cannot do for you.
Wow. I mean, that's direct. It's direct, you know?
It's a very direct connection.
So you say,
And
okay, continue.
so that is just one little piece of it. And if we were to politic about it, you need to ask yourself who in their right mind would actually fight to the death to keep ownership of a useless asset. If land was useless, white people would have said, "Oh, you want your land back? Thank you very much. Please sign here. You now have it."
The same as political power. Like, sign here. Yes, you've got political power.
Exactly. So we are looking at things probably because it is not a trendy thing. Land is boring. To be honest, it's a, yeah, well, I've got a piece of land, so what? It is boring. If we go spiritual, we are Africans, and in our spirituality, there's elements of nature that actually combine. And again, this is something we do not see, maybe because it's conversations we don't actually delve deeper into. Earth, wind, fire, and water. There's a reason why people get taken to a river for cleansing. There's a reason why people light candles when they pray, because when you're lighting a candle, you are bringing the fire element closer. When you go to the water, you are dealing with the water element. Some people will go to a mountain to connect with the land and to also open themselves up to the wind. So all of these things, if we do not own our land, then you have people saying, "Well, sorry, you are not allowed to come onto my land to access the river to do your rituals." So, yeah.
No, that's deep. Very interestingly, and we'll talk about this privately. I went to the river recently, like 2 weeks ago. I had a river experience. Oh my God. Like, yeah, it's for book three. But when, of course, we are friends, I'll tell you. I'm thinking,
Awesome.
as you talk, I'm thinking of a Diblo van Onse Yemel, the anthems, the Afrikaans anthem side. It talks exactly directly about land and its importance. Very fascinating that they have that embedded. Now, you mentioned Hore, black people in South Africa own 13% of the land. Who owns the rest? Because I'm pretty sure it's, is it in the, just who owns the rest?
The rest is owned by white people, either individually or in large corporates.
Okay.
And then there's pockets that are owned by the government. And white people will tend to say, "If you want land reform, why don't you release the land owned by government?" It's a nonsensical argument from people who have something to lose if they were to reverse the apartheid land ownership pattern. So for them, it's convenient. Well, don't take my land, take the one that the government owns. And which country has a government that doesn't own land and actually becomes stable?
They're clever, these people. You know,
Yeah, so
today,
the
so I just
yeah.
want to add to that. You know, I live in the Central Karoo, eh? So the Central Karoo is a, how do I put this? What words do I? It's a thin place, meaning it's a hidden gem. Let me put it that way. So there's a lot of old money here, like old money. And also there's a lot of poverty, meaning there's a very small or seemingly small middle class. So you see abject poverty and you see old money, and almost all of the old money own the land here. There's a family
Yeah.
called the Gosters. I think they own, I just don't know how acres or hectares, I don't know, but I know it's in their thousands. They even own a mountain, a little hill. It's part of their land, just up the road from where I stay. I remember a while back, we went to this other farm with Wonga because he wanted to show me. I want to show you the farms in this place. So went to this farm. It wasn't the Gosters. The moment we walked into their land, from Kogeiting, they were selling peaches, jam, goat cheese, skin, biltong, meat, livestock, vegetables. I'm not kidding. This is a family from Komnyango, including eggs. So by the time you get out of that, you have shopped Pick n Pay, and they don't go to Pick n Pay. They don't go to Checkers. These are the people who will pull a boat when it's a long weekend to go to Hermanus or to Knysna. But anyway, I'm
Yeah.
digressing, but it's a point I'm trying to make, or rather to affirm what you are saying. Or you can do nothing significant without land, because what are you going to leave your children? What are you,
Precisely.
policy yako Old Mutual that they're going to blow? So yeah, I just wanted us to stay a little bit on land. Do you have any final thoughts? And then we can move on to enterprising again.
My final thought on it is people need to help some of us make sense of this thinking. You have people who have, for generations, decided you are not human enough. And they have no problem hating on you. And then you want to sit back and hope, or these people are going to spend their life feeding you. That's something else. Like the family you are talking about essentially own the one source of food. So we need to take back a bit and say, but honestly, should we be fed by other people? Should we be educated by them, etc.? Or should we actually take the land and do something about it?
Jeez. Wait, I don't even know what direction to take after this, because this is so deep. And it answers the questions that I have for you. The questions that I have for you will lead us back here. But let's just track on. Let's just talk about a case study. I don't know if you know about Lokshin culture. I want to talk about Maponya, and I want to talk about Lokshin culture. Maybe Arthome and Tate Maponya, because he's slightly older. He's of a different generation. So Tate Maponya started Ntate Khuzwayo in Alex. There was the Khuzwayos who had a spaza shop. They had a shop. Nersaibitse spaza shop back in the days. Remember, the spaza thing came. Neli go shopong. So they had a shop, and then they had a butchery next door, and then they had a bottle store. So they were considered quite rich, growing up. So nereka go bona and all that. And fast forward to 2023, it is nowhere to be seen, nowhere to be found. In fact, where they used to have the shop, it's a bunch of rented little shacks and all that. And then you have a Maponya that created what he created. What is that about? Is why Maponya became Maponya Ali One? Why Resinabo Maponya by 100 and whatever?
Maponya, Mutsuenyane, Chabalala, that so there's him and there's his contemporaries,
Yeah,
right?
there's something brothers as well. Can I keep on Mangbali?
Kunene.
The Kunene brothers, yes.
The Kunene brothers, those are contemporaries. And so one thing about that crowd of people is that we are talking about entrepreneurs proper. Those men were people who actually survived in circumstances selling 100 times worse than what we have now. I don't know if people know this, but actually, the law at the time when Boma Bonya started businesses was that a black South African legally cannot even register a company in South Africa.
Yeah.
So apartheid was that deep. Yeah, it was actually a law, not even a thing, yeah, attitude, yeah, all right, you're black, why do you want this? No, there was a legal impediment that says, as a black person, you are not allowed to register a business. People were not allowed to even establish businesses. So Boma Bonya were pioneers who created the small grocery shop in townships. So they were entrepreneurs in the proper sense of the word. And I think that is why they had the longevity that they enjoyed.
They were in for
They,
a long haul. They understood the mission.
yeah, for them it was literally apartheid situation was iron grinding iron. So they became the sharpest of the lot. And they were able to survive because for Bona, freedom was almost like removing tons of weight from their shoulder. So they could easily thrive beyond freedom. So as I say, we might know Maponya, but Ntate Sam Motsuenyane is still alive. He did very well. Motsuenyane is the founder of our African Bank, which many people don't even know. African Bank was actually created by a black man. No, he single-handedly went house to house wherever to raise capital. Capital I will raise a stock fail. Like literally, how individual families contributing 100 rand here and there until the 1 million rand he needed for the license was put together. Very fascinating story that I would suggest, or maybe consider exploring a history of that business or that business. African Bank story is absolutely fascinating. So why did Maponya survive? I think he survived as long as he did because he was a true entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And he did the right things. When the deal Yao developer Maponya Mall came about, it landed on an entrepreneur.
I get it. I really get
Yeah,
it.
I mean he owned the land already. So it was not even a case here or Renze a BE Dilinyana. Old Mutual was already developing a shopping center, but they needed some
The
Dilinyana.
BEE,
Yeah. I think for me that is the essential difference to the crowd that emerged after 1994.
Which then obviously brings me to the crowd that emerged after 1994, the ills, the good, the bad, and the ugly of BEE. What do you think BEE was it important, and where did it go wrong? Because I belong to the era of BEE, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. When I started my office furniture business back in 2004, I always forget what was it, 2002 or 2004, but I know I was 25, and I went into office furniture. And it wasn't, I mean, I didn't have a factory. I didn't even have a land. I was your typical middleman, which was the trend at the time. I spoke to companies, government in particular, and then I would go to manufacturers and then get stock. And I was a middleman, but it was a business in its own right. And it brought me a lot of money, and it opened my eyes, and I saw a world that a woman, a black woman at that age, would not necessarily be privy to. And I survived on tenders because of BEE. Now, What was the problem, and what is still the problem with BEE? I just want to hear it from you, and I'll tell you what the problem happened with me.
All right. BEE is absolute rubbish. Okay. Yeah, I know. I've let it out. Okay. Let me tell you how I have described BEE in various conversations. Ne? BEE is to black entrepreneurship what captive breeding is to wildlife.
Oh, it's the zoo.
It is the zoo. Let me tell you why I say that, ne?
Okay.
If we didn't have BEE, and let me be clear, I'm not saying if we didn't have transformation, I'm saying if we didn't have BEE, we would not have, or rather, if we didn't have a BEE, we would have a Maponya today that emerged after 94. But the reason why we don't have somebody we can speak about on the same terms as Maponya is because of BEE.
Ah, I get it. I see. I see.
Yeah, it's a
But
for now it BEE
well,
basically.
this is the end of the road for you. If you want to continue listening to this episode, you will have to subscribe to the Shrek Podcast for 99 rands. The link to subscribe will be found on all the show notes at the bottom and on all of my social media handles on a link tree. It simply says, subscribe to the Stretch Podcast, and then you will get all the episode in full, plus bonus episodes and some of the coaching notes that I share with subscriber only. Until then, I will see you next week with another episode. Love and green lights to you.